Thank you. So, good evening on a hot night, at least for those of us in France. I don't know in Portugal. The summer is in full swing, I guess. Although we did have big storms last night, which was quite refreshing, at least here in Paris, in the Paris region. And the heat brings us to embrace whatever is, embrace the unknown, as any temperature, any season can do. For those of us in the Paris region where it's not usually this hot, this is becoming more common, but it's the unknown. Like you always say, I've learned a lot about the heat from the Portuguese, and how to be with the heat, how to hold it, and respond to it. One of the most intense experiences was when we were in, I can't remember what the place was called, but it was in 2018, and there was a Jukai of four people, of Miguel and Marlene and Anna and Oscar. And it was so intense, the heat. I think it was like 40 degrees sometimes, maybe even a little more. And at night, what was so ruthless was at night it didn't really cool down very much. So we had no respite. And that was a really powerful experience to sit with that, and to be with it and accommodate. To use the space differently, we ended up sitting in the chapel of the place because it was much, much cooler, even though it was hot there too, but it was much, much cooler. And we did the Jukai at night in the chapel because it was too cold to do it, too hot to do it during the day. And so there's these very dramatic, beautiful photos of that Jukai. This is what our practice is, to just respond to what is. When I was going through I'm preparing a writing workshop that I am giving on Sunday, at the Institut Jacometti here in Paris. I think I might have spoken about this already, about how I was annoyed by the people there, yeah. And then trying not to hang on to my annoyance. In any case, in the writing workshop, I can do whatever I want. They can't tell me what to do. They've done all the publicity and rewritten how I was presenting it and whatever, but I'll do whatever I want to do in any case. So I've been preparing for it and going through all of my old notes and work and books. And I have a stack of books on Giacometti like this, and a lot of writing around him and my own book. And I came across some other interesting quotes because this was like, this was in 20, 2007, 8, 9 that I was writing, doing all of this. And so I came across this notion of that this also corresponded with my full-blown obsession with James Joyce and Ulysses. And I had come across this quote that the Buddhist teacher Mark Epstein, who has written some fabulous, he's also a psychotherapist, has written some really fabulous books about Buddhism and psychotherapy and whatnot. And he cites something that Joyce had said, James Joyce had said, about how to appreciate a work of art. I've never been able to find this quote elsewhere. Probably some professional researcher could find it, but I haven't been able to find it. So I always have to refer to Mark Epstein's version of it. But so Joyce talked about when appreciating a work of art or approaching a work of art, he used the word beholding. So as this is the best way to experience a work of art. We could extend this to any thing, right? Everything is a work of art, right? So it can be a person, a situation, the heat, the rain, an emotion, the headlines in the newspaper, whatever. Beholding. And the way that so Joyce explained this was that if we become too close to it, the work of art, and we're extending this to anything, it's almost a pornographic experience in the sense that we are we're not allowing the appropriate space between us and the other, us and the thing, us and the work of art. This is, of course, when we're looking at it from a perspective of duality, right? And we can experience duality from a non-dual point of view, meaning that we are one with the other or the thing or the work. But we also have to recognize that there is a distance, there is an appropriate space, We kind of intuitively know in when we're walking in the street, that there's a certain amount of distance to maintain from people. We may absolutely have the experience of being one with all these people, but the oneness is expressing itself in all these different ways, and we have to respect those differences. And if we don't, then Joyce said this is becomes pornographic. We're too close to the work of art. We can't really see it for what it is or appreciate it. He said, if we become too distant, if we pull too far away, it becomes criticism, judgmental. We're no longer in contact with it. We're taking a spot, a position above or outside or beyond, and we're not fully engaging from the place of being one with. We're really emphasizing our separation. So maybe the first one, too close, is we're what do you call that? Suddenly the word escapes me, but we're like too close. There's a word in psychotherapy about this, when you become too close to someone or something. It'll come to me. So it's emphasizing
It's fusionnel.
fusion, exactly. So that would be the first one, maybe, if we wanted to look at it in those terms. Codependent, maybe, it could be something like that. Not seeing each for what it is, right? And if we become too distant, then we don't see it either. We're pulling away and we're so he's talking about a work of art, so then we become critical of it. And so Joyce, his beholding, and what Mark Epstein calls the middle ground, because Mark Epstein is a Buddhist, so he can use the middle way or the middle ground, is when the viewer of the work of art or of anything surrenders herself or himself to his own, direct experience of whatever it is. And in that direct experience, that's true intimacy. It's not the pornography of being too close, and it's not the absence of intimacy that is pulling too far away. When we surrender to the direct experience, when we no longer have ideas about ourself and the other, even an idea about viewer and work of art, this is what we call beholding. So it's like being the holding, English is good for that, these kinds of things. The word is behold, but it's actually being the holding, something like that. And this, is really about our practice, which is, gives an insight into why I am so, my reading of Joyce's work is a Buddhist reading of it. Because this was the way he approached life, art, being, which is a very Buddhist way of approaching it. And his, so if we apply that to everyday life, if we apply that to emotions, others, how do we behold bombs in Iran? How do we behold people starving in Gaza? How do we behold heat wave? How do we behold pollution, in Paris, in this Paris region, which is like a bowl? It's just the pollution's really bad now. When it gets hot like this and it just sits, it's really uncomfortable. Some people more than others, but how do we behold that? How do we behold that experience? What is our direct experience of it? And that implies not becoming too close, just, all it would almost be like just resigning to it, like we're throwing oneself fully into the pollution, seeking the pollution out or something like that. With the headlines, it could be, really binging on it, like just not stopping, like looking at our phone at the headlines every hour or something, or reading every single detail about whatever it is. That might be someone's job to do that as a journalist. That was our jobs, was to do that. And maybe in that case, it's not the same thing as because we are engaging with it in a different way, not from a point of view of like wanting to consume it, but engaging in it from this service to the other. We want to inform the others, so we engage in informing ourselves as completely as possible, something like that. We behold from that position that we are beholding, something like that. And if we can do this, I came across, so in my going through all of these notes and everything, I also came across a quote from Anthony Burgess, who is an English writer, who wrote The Clockwork Orange. Other things too, but which became a movie, kind of a legendary mythic movie film, A Clockwork Orange. But he was, a super Joycean obsessional like me. And he wrote a book about Ulysses. I have it, I forget what it's called, but and about Joyce. And he, the quote I have that is that he equates Joyce's hero, Bloom, that's very telling. It's a flower, right? He's just this guy, an advertising salesman in a Jewish advertising salesman in Dublin in 1904, right? So it's completely just Mr. Ordinary, right? And he gives him this name, Bloom, which in Joyce's telling is his parents were immigrants from Hungary, and in Hungarian his name was Virág, which means bloom in English. This is all Joyce's invention in the story, right? But so Anthony Burgess says, Bloom represents, and this is true in the book, something remarkable but unpretentious springing out of common earth. And he says, this is a wildflower. So, of course, when I come upon this quote, whenever I read it, I'm like, yeah, of course, that is why we're called the wildflowers, because we're something remarkable but unpretentious springing out of common earth. It's not just us. It's everyone. It's everything. Something remarkable, but unpretentious, great humility, and yet extraordinary, springing out of just this common earth. That's the definition of the wildflower. That's the definition of Leopold Bloom. That's the definition of each one of us, of everything. And in order to appreciate that, our way of appreciating it is by beholding it. We can truly appreciate that remarkable, that something remarkable. From this, obscure thing sprouting up from common earth, if we can behold it fully, completely, just behold. Surrender to just the experience of it without having an idea about it. I just glance out my window and I see, around. I don't even notice it usually around the tree growing there on the sidewalk. There's all these little plants like sprouting around it. And I'm sure the city comes around regularly and takes them all away, right? But those are absolutely remarkable, unpretentious beings sprouting from the common earth. And the common earth, here in this circumstance, is an urban sidewalk, right? Even the fact that the trees are there is something remarkable, but unpretentious. The trees are not pretentious in the least. We are, of course, we situate ourselves as being, we take that distant critic's view, and we are higher beings than the tree. Or the tree, sometimes I'm annoyed because there's a tree right in front of my window. So this room is always dark because there's a tree right there. And yet, that tree is just this remarkable, unpretentious being, fully in bloom, even when it's not. I went on a walk this afternoon, and because it was not so hot, I thought I've got to get in a walk before it gets hot again tomorrow. And there in the park, where all of these trees are just absolutely amazing, flourishing, in all shades of green and shapes of leaves and tall and small and wide and whatever, there was this tree that clearly was dead. It had no leaves on it. It was completely bare. In the wintertime, I wouldn't have even noticed that tree, probably, because all of the trees would have been bare. It was just really stunning. It was like this remarkable but unpretentious thing springing from the common earth. And it really, wow, I truly beheld it. I even stopped. I would have just walked on by, but I kind of just stopped and turned to look at it like, wow. And it was absolutely remarkable, beautiful, these bare branches, although it's dead. Otherwise, those branches would not be bare like that and spindly in the flourishing early summer. I didn't come to it with a judgment of, oh, it's ugly, or, oh, why didn't somebody take that away? Why was it killed, or why did it die, or any of this? I didn't enter into that. I just appreciated this something remarkable springing unpretentiously from the common ground, common earth. The common earth, so it's the Sometimes we say common ground, meaning the one ground. We share common ground. We share a common space. Often it's used in political debates or disagreements about things. We try to find our common ground. Well, it's all common ground. It's all common. It's all one. We don't really have to look for it because it's all this unpretentious common earth, right? Which the Dalai Lama suggests. I read this recently too. He says we should come to what would happen if we came to life in here and now as if we were tourists and kept in mind the images we've seen of the earth from space. And it's this really, I wonder if I can find that quote here. I'm sure I noted it. It's this really, was that long ago? It's this really tiny, oh yeah, here it is. Think of the world as if it's seen from space, so small and insignificant, yet so beautiful. So once again, here is this unpretentious thing that's remarkable, right? Could there really be anything to be gained from harming others during our stay here? So we're tourists, right? And think of the world it's seen from space. It's so small and insignificant in the, big scheme of things. And it's so solitary, so alone there. And yet it's beautiful. And in the cosmic dance of the spheres, it's just another one of them. They're all like that, right? All the other spheres and stars and things you can see and not see. And if we can appreciate it that way, and then appreciate that we're all on this same ground, we're all sharing this ground, we're all tourists here. What could we possibly gain by harming each other? What is really the point, would that be, if we can behold this planet, this our home, in that way, then we can truly appreciate it. Like we can truly appreciate a work of art. We behold it that way. And as we know, we don't generally tend to behold the earth that way. We don't treat it with that kind of care. We don't treat others with that kind of care, and we don't treat the planet with that kind of care. Even though we know that that's our doom, right? We don't know how and why exa when exactly, but we're aware that, and as you know, I think it was when we were talking about some text in a study group once, a long time ago, and I think it was Adrien who said this, that we even approach climate change from the view of the human. We maybe won't live on this planet, but other life will. And we just focus on our little corner of it, which is a way of not truly beholding, of not really appreciating the oneness of it all. And if we did appreciate the oneness of it all, then we probably would treat it differently, because we know that when we do appreciate, when we do behold something that we consider precious, we treat it differently than something that we think is unremarkable and not worthy. All of these distinctions we make when we don't truly behold. So yeah, on my walk today too, there was a purple cellophane wrapper, like some from some bonbon or something, some like food, like junk food. Bright purple right there on the beside the path. And I saw it, and had I not beheld it as something remarkable, I would have just walked on by. But I beheld it as something remarkable, and I stooped down and I picked it up and I put it in the trash that was like 3 steps away, I responded directly to it, having been in this posture of beholding. Otherwise, I would just have saw as a piece of trash on the ground and walked on by, So you see that it can have an incident, it can have an influence on how we then interact with the world. If we come from it from this spot of beholding rather than the pornographic too close or the distance, not even from the criticism aspect, often we don't even see truly what is, nor from the too close, the closeness of the pornographic place. We don't truly see the other, we don't truly see the thing. We don't truly experience what we're feeling. We cut off from what we're feeling. Oddly enough, when we're too close, we actually separate, which seems like a paradox. It seems like contrary, but it is what happens. So that's what comes up for me today from walking and having prepared the writing workshop and looking into all the my old notes on Giacometti. So if anyone would like to share, comment, question. Well, yeah.
Hello, good evening. There is this this sentence that you used in the beginning, which keeps keeps it's very present. And actually, I realize now it's a very common, actually common expression. You talked about respect the differences, respecting the differences, and I keep coming back to that. So, because in that sentence we have this thing of acknowledging the differences, because if you need to respect, even without going into what that means, respect, so we are acknowledging the differences. And then we have this respect. And just now, when you were talking about that instance where you saw the purple wrapper in the ground. You acknowledged it as you said, and I guess respect the difference meant putting it, picking it up and putting it in. I kind of hesitate to say its proper place, but I guess that's what I mean in that instance. It doesn't. Yeah, it's. I don't. I really don't want to say, like, develop much more than this. Yeah. So that it was really, and it's interesting because, like I was saying, that's that sentence, respect the differences. Actually, it's very it's very common. We hear a lot about that respect in all sorts of contexts. So yeah, that is a sentence keep worth remind keep being reminded of. Yes, thank you.
Yes, it is to to put things in their appropriate place, you know? So there's a difference between the leaf or the twig or the piece of dirt on the ground on a trail and the piece of plastic that's there on the ground. And I wouldn't pick up the leaf and the twig and put it in the trash can. I could, but there would be no reason to do that. I pick up the piece of plastic and put it in the trash can, yeah. Seeing the difference and then appreciating the difference and the seeing things as they are, and then it's clear what needs to be done. But I am.
This somehow reminds me of the saving or the four by the first vow, saving all sentient beings. Because there was discussion about, whether it's saving, seeing, recognizing. There was another term that we were using as well, but it feels, well, so now it feels like we have to extend it to, I. Saving all sentient beings and all purple wrappers, of course, but so there I sense there's a difference, but there is, in a way, in this idea of doing, trying, well, beholding, so that the correct or the appropriate action is becomes obvious. This, in a way, this also is a way. I mean, it also applies to this applies to anything. So it applies to human beings as well. And it's so it's it sounds to I mean to me it feels like it's part or related to this vow at least of almost like the first vow, the first vow maybe is a first step, acknowledge, like you did, with the rapper, you stopped, instead of just walking by. And then, so usually with human beings, mostly there's, I mean, it depends, sometimes, just the other day, a friend of mine was sharing that with her son, it's complicated in school. Because he is super provocative. He's a super smart, super fast little kid. And so I can see, I can almost, I see how he unsettles a lot of adults. I mean, how he would do that. I've actually even seen him do it. So it's just to say that she had difficulties beholding the situation and therefore, difficulty trying to find the appropriate response because a lot of responses had not really worked. Anyway, I was just making this connection. And also another thing is that I was driving the car on the way to Marseille earlier on to pick up Luciana, and I hadn't seen this for a long time in the countryside. There was a truck driving in front of me that I had to let through, and then I drove behind it, and suddenly I see a can fly out of the window. I was like, wow, this is a and it was kind of purple as well because it was a Red Bull can. I actually saw it. And so, of course, I had this whole thing in me. Also, it reminded me immediately of this this viral video I saw a while back, a couple of years ago, where this biker sort of when this happens, so he has a camera with him a lot of the time, apparently. And so he basically, when people do that, he picks up the trash and then he catches up to the guy in the car and he just stops at the next traffic light right next to them. He basically chucks it back, at them. And he's all dressed completely in dark, like with a huge bike or something. So it's very, I mean, I, of course, he doesn't, right? The videos he shows, nobody's like, they just wait for him to leave. So this flashed up in my mind. And then so I beheld, because I really did acknowledge what was happening. I was almost a mix of shock and wow, okay, this is, I connected to the guy, I was like, the guy is probably so overwhelmed or I don't know what in his truck that he can't think of anything else. You know, this thing is empty and he can't think of anything else but just to, you know, eradicate it from his environment, you know, about checking it out. Yeah, little awareness of maybe the correct thing to do, or I don't know. Well, I wouldn't advance in that direction. But what was clear was that if I would had to do that, I would have to had to stop, take dinner. I was already kind of maybe getting late to the airport, and mostly the road that I was supposed to take was immediately turning left. So, with all these elements, I evaluated that it was not appropriate for me to road rage, pick up the and road rage back, catching up the truck to chuck a can in his the driver's face, or at least back into his cabin or something. It would have been funny though, but yeah. So that was my plastic wrapper, purple wrapper moment of the day. Thank you.
Yes, and so that's a good example too of so you we what is the appropriate response? In that situation, it was not appropriate to stop and throw it back at the guy's face, you know. It depends. Always depends. It's not fixed, it's always changing, which is the beauty of it, but it's also a challenge because we would like it to be very clear. In this situation, you do that. If you do that, then you carry around a screwdriver, and sometimes you need a hammer. A screwdriver doesn't solve every situation, right? So you have to be open to all. Yes, that I am.
Sorry, I forgot to mention that also, this also crossed my mind. I was actually driving Marjolaine's car. So I thought, I cannot actually risk anything, any trouble happening with the car because it's not my own. This also crossed my mind. So you see, Marjolaine, just to say. So definitely not appropriate in this circumstance.
Yeah, another example of so when we truly behold, then we take care, we take care of the situation of where we are, who we are, what's here, what's, the circumstances. Yeah.
I also had a lot of purple wrappers experience Monday. Was it Monday, I think? It was just after the Fête de la Musique. And you cannot imagine the amount of trash in the streets from République down to the center of Paris, across everywhere, and broken glass. And so biking was kind of a challenge because you had to, make your way through. I kept staring at the road and trying to avoid the big chunks of glass, and beholding this and thinking, wow. So yes, maybe there weren't enough trash cans. There were a lot of people and not caring for our planet, I guess. It was amazing. And so yeah, and there's something else that I want to share. It's been on my keep coming back. I went to see this movie on the evening of the Fête de la Musique, actually, because I didn't want to. It's too hot anyway to do anything, for me anyway. And I went to see The Life of Chuck, which is just came out. And I won't go into the story, but at some point they quote this Walt Whitman that is one in one of your poems, Roshi. I contain multitudes. And I kept have it's coming back all the time. This I contain multitudes. And wow, this is and this thing about do I repeat myself? I contain multitudes. And this is also about this. I contain multitudes. So all of these wrappers, all of these broken glass and empty bottles and plastic crushed on the sidewalk and all of it with the tree and the trash and the beautiful tree, and it's all there and I contain it all, and it's very strong that line and what it entails. Actually, it's not just it's a line and what it says, and anyway, so that's that, and I got internet. No, I came back, so I'm happy.
Yeah, thank you. Yep. Well, so in that poem that you're referring to, and I even have said, well, I plagiarized Walt Whitman. Although, as poets and musicians and things, we don't think of ourselves as plagiarizing. We think of ourselves as extending or sampling, is what they call it now in music. That's it's all it's very deep that though. Yeah, I contain multitudes. And the people who, left all the broken bottles and all that. On Sunday morning, I went for brunch in our neighborhood here at the Marbrerie, which some of you know. The woman said she had to leave home at 6 in order to prepare the brunch. She lives in Vincennes and she usually takes the bus, and she said it was like a combat zone. Walking from Vincennes to where I live, to the Marbrerie in Montreuil, which is like right behind my house. She didn't wait for the bus. She said all along the way on benches and bus stops, people were passed out, and there was just like you're describing, broken glass and cans and bottles and just detritus, everywhere. Which, everyone was out for music, and then this is what was left in the these were the traces that were left. It's quite it's an interesting phenomenon, right? That there's a huge at and the fête de la musique is everywhere in France now, and I even think in like in New York they celebrate it too now, and that from that, wanting to celebrate music, it's become just this like massive party scene. But I'm sure there was music involved in all of that trash and all of the drinking and all of the people passing. I'm sure there was music involved somewhere there. Claudia wants to say something? Yeah.
Just want to say that when I came back home that night, it was like three cars burning in front of my house. So it was, I'm not sure. So for us, it was kind of crazy with all the, I don't know how come, but the people from the car, they were in front of their car, like watching their car burning. So it was kind of, and they were very silent and very concentrated on, it was kind of the end because the les pompiers they just came just before, but so it was like three cars in the street. It was kind of amazing, burning. So it was it's always like I mean and okay. So it was a little more than just cans and trash and the step the level after.
Yes, and so we can then say, okay, so how did that happen? What happens when we're celebrating music and then goes from there? There's obviously or clearly some sort of, you know, disconnect with things as they are to damage someone's car. I'm assuming those people didn't light their own cars on fire. So clearly it was someone who was treating someone else's, not seeing it as their own. You know, seeing it only as someone else's car, not seeing it as their own car. They would not do that to their own car. So it's seeing only the differences and not seeing the oneness. And how, you know, we could trace it all back to that very basic, you know, attachment to self and not seeing the oneness. Of course, it's, you know, very complicated because there's social and economic and cultural issues involved too, and whatever, but it comes back to all of those social, economic, cultural issues come back to that very basic poison of attachment to self. I hope no one was hurt in the burning of those cars. I mean, they didn't explode or anything. No.
Yes, it did, but no one was hurt. Sure.
Yeah.
But yet, no, the fire was huge. I mean, that was huge. And people, everybody was outside. I mean, everybody got scared.
Isn't there also this bonfire ritual on the La Saint-Jean, le feu de la Saint-Jean. This is what it was. It's part of the party, Claudia. Plus, they're going to collect the insurance money. So,
not in Paris, it's not, but yeah.
That's the same day. Is it the same day?
Le feu de la Saint-Jean, so je sais que c'est...
It's not the 21st.
Ah.
No, but... I did it once, but in Canada, in Quebec. So the only... And I think it was in the summer. I think it was later. I don't think it's the same day.
Saint Jean is the 24, I think.
Of June? June 24?
Yeah.
Saint Jean Baptiste.
Yeah, but is it the feu de la Saint Jean? I'm not sure if it's the same.
Yeah.
I'll check. I'll check, Adrien. I will check.
Yeah. It's not, it was not the 21st, though, Saint Jean, but anyway. Yeah. And even those fêtes de feu, you know, like that, they're very pagan ancient rituals involved with celebrating light, you know, and you know, the blossoming of the summer, and in the fall then it's, you know, celebrating the end of light and trying to maintain some light, but it's become kind of lost and we burn cars. Yes.
You know, I have to say that the day after, I think it was tough for me to, how do you say that? Because you had the three cars, you know, they were burnt, like totally black, and you could see just the structures. And I didn't think it was beautiful. I mean, you know, I was like, wow, it's kind of scary. You know, it was kind of, I could, you know, just because you said that you saw this, all these things differently, but my, the way I was seeing, I mean, watching the cars, the burnt cars the day after, for me, it was kind of scary. It was not like this, you know, it was like, wow. It was kind of a violence for me, like just next to my door. You know, it's just next to my apartment, to my house. So it was like, wow, it's okay. So it comes in, you know, if Okay, it's so close. So the violence is very close. Okay.
And it does to appreciate, when we say it's something beautiful, it doesn't mean we have to think that it's a work of art in the sense that we normally do. However, can we behold it just for what it is? People talk about the terrible beauty of the explosion of the atomic bomb. It's off, it's absolutely tragic for what it means, but and it, the atomic bomb comes from separation. Separating the atom gives rise to this, terrible, violent, and yet stunningly beautiful, apparently, image. But when we say something remarkable but unpretentious, something beautiful, it doesn't mean that we have to find beauty in the atomic bomb or in the burned out cars, and we, but then can we behold our fear and what that represents for us and behold the violence that be one with that fear and that violence and what how we react to it or something. Instead of becoming angry, and we might become angry. And like Adrian said, those people will collect the insurance money, certainly. And yet at the same time, they, there's some kind of loss and violation of their, the extension of themselves as we see our cars as being sometimes, Yeah, Claudia.
You are muted, Claude.
I go on with the story and I finish it. Just okay, what I found beautiful, it was this morning when I left with my bike and there was these two black guy, huge black guys, and they were sweeping the street because of the, because they took the car away, I guess, this morning. And they were sweeping the street with two. And this morning I was like, wow, so that guy, these guys has now they have to do that. I mean, it was kind of like the end of the story, like these two guys sweeping the street this morning to take everything off the black, all the black.
And maybe if they, like the guy in the film Perfect Days who cleans the toilets, maybe if it's possible that they actually behold their work and can fully
But I,
sweeping,
no, but that was something kind of very, no, this morning it was really like something really beautiful. As a matter of fact, the two guys, they were very slow and very, so it was, now I remember that.
Yep. So we just never know. The mystery persists. And I guess we will end with that. Thank you.